programming. There'll also be a period for listener comments. We urge everyone interested in the growth and improvement of WBAI to attend this meeting. Monday, April 8th, 6:30 p.m., 75 Varick Street, 14th floor.
And you're listening to radio station, WBAI in New York. Thank you. It's 8 o'clock, and that means it's Tuesday night. Actually, it means it's time for Off the Hook because it's Tuesday night. Yeah, let's play the intro. And a good evening to everybody. This is Off the Hook. It's amazing how quickly the weeks just go. It seems like we were just here yesterday, but here we are again. And another action-packed edition of the program that tells you how things are going in the world of high tech and why it's something to pay attention to, not let decisions be made for you. It's an important kind of a thing to keep in mind. And we're here with a bunch of people, as always. Mike over there.
Hello.
Auto Jack.
Yo.
Jim.
Hello.
And Delchai joins us.
Morning.
From the depths of wherever it is that you emerge from every now and then.
More or less.
Yeah.
Brooklyn.
I've heard of it. Wow. Well, it's, I don't know. I'm in kind of a strange mood. No tension at all this week. Everything worked fine. The elevators worked. Well, not for you, I guess. Definitely. You got stuck in the elevator. But the subways worked for me. And, you know, I got here plenty of time to spare. And everything seems okay. I wish I could say it was the same in the rest of the world. You know, it's, I don't know, occasionally you just sort of, you turn on the news and you just see how everybody is just tearing each other to pieces and saying all these horrible things and just all this hostility and hatred out there. And you just wish there was something you could do. There's something that you could say or something that, some answer that you would have to it all. And, You know, it's just something I don't think that we're capable of fully understanding the implications of. All I can hope is that eventually they will reach an understanding and Cablevision subscribers will be able to see the Yankee games, you know, because it's been all this, you know, vehement stuff going on out there, and it's just horrible. I mean, we're all human beings. We have to remember that. But for those of you out of the areas, in this whole big to-do about it, apparently, cable networks have changed over the years. It used to be that they would be happy to be put on cable systems, but now they charge cable systems to be have their signal carried. And not only that, not only do they charge cable systems, they have commercials. Remember when the early days of cable, there were no commercials on anything, you know? And you could say things, too. You could get away with all kinds of things because, hey, it's cable. It's not going out over the air. And now, even the channels that supposedly play nothing but movies, they censor, they cut, they put commercials in. Unbelievable. I accidentally taped something on AMC the other night. It's American Movie Classics. You'd think that, you know, movie classics, they would say, that's a classic, we don't mess with it. But no, they edit it. They edit it for content and for time, and they put commercials in it. It's horrible. And this is the channel people pay for. Anyway, the whole thing with the Yankees is that there's this new network called YES. Does anybody know what YES stands for? Well, a bunch of
Yankee nerds don't know. Yankee Entertainment Systems, I believe.
Yankee Entertainment Systems?
Something like that.
How does a channel become a system?
I think they just chose that because it sounds good, maybe.
I think they just wanted to spell the word YES.
Yeah.
Word association.
Yeah, I guess so.
YES.
Well, I mean, it could have said Yankee Entertainment Network, then you'd have a yen for the network, you know, be kind of, I guess that would go above most people's heads. But anyway, the thing is, Cablevision wants to not charge all of its customers extra, which they would have to do if it became part of a basic service. And apparently the YES network doesn't want to be a premium service, even though they would get to keep 100% of the profits. So it's hard to take sides in these big corporate battles, you know, because they're all evil, and they're all just out for a buck. But it is fun to watch.
Why do the Yankees need their own channel?
That's another question. Why does a team need an... I mean, it's...
I think it's a profit motivation.
Exactly.
There's a channel in Canada called the Raptors Network, which I get on the Canadian DSN, and that's for Toronto Raptors basketball. And I wonder, what do they do the rest of the year? What do they do when they're not playing? I mean, a game is like 2 hours every few days. So I guess they talk about it. They have phone-ins. They brood about what could have happened. Maybe they play games from the past.
I know exactly why there's a YES network.
Why isn't there a Met network, huh?
No, listen carefully. George Steinbrenner owns this, okay? Mm-hmm. So what he's doing is, by bookkeeping funnies, is he makes the Yankees look like they're not making a profit. Look, this has been in the newspapers. It's the YES network that's making the profit. Of their product is the Yankee games, okay? So they're just sliding the profitability over to the network. Mm-hmm. So Steinberg can say, oh, my poor Yankees, we're not making any money. We need subsidies. We need the Congress to say we're not a monopoly, all sorts of things. So they get all these stupid breaks, and, you know, the city talks about building a new stadium for them because, gee, the Yankees aren't making a profit. No, of course not. It's the YES network that Steinbrenner owns that's making the profit because he shifts it over to them.
I don't know. That sounds like quite an accusation there, and I hope you have the evidence to back it up. Don't need Steinbrenner on my case on top of everybody else. By the time we had Murdoch waiting for us downstairs, I don't want that to happen again.
Look,
with this.
He was 65 at the time. There was no trouble for us.
Let's not talk about it. Okay, here's some interesting legal news. A federal judge has heard arguments on a request to dismiss the prosecution of a Russian software company charged with violating a digital copyright law. Mike, have you heard about this?
I have.
Yeah, well,
the company is called Elcomsoft.
No, I know you've heard about the case, but have you heard about the hearing yesterday?
I heard, yes.
The hearing yesterday in San Jose.
I just wanted to remind people which company.
Okay, all right. Well, now that you've reminded people which company, tell us what that company does.
That company manufactures a number of products. Mm-hmm. Including one called Advanced Ebook Processor, which you can, you can no longer obtain it, but when you could obtain it, you could use it to take an Adobe ebook file,
mm-hmm.
Which is a sort of file that comes with all these kinds of protections. You can't print it out, or you can't copy it from one computer to the next, and it removes those protections and spits back out a plain old PDF file.
Mm-hmm. And where's the fraud?
apparently this violates the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Uh-huh. And who's making a ton of money at the expense of Adobe?
I don't know.
There's got to be a victim here somewhere. Someone has to be profiting. Must be a drug cartel or somebody that's benefiting from this.
Adobe somehow claims to be losing money.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the price of the software is far more than the cost of an ebook. So.
Well, now you said that you can't obtain the software anymore.
Yes.
What if I were to give somebody the software? What if I already have the software? Am I allowed to give them the software if somebody writes to me and says, "Emmanuel, will you please give me the software?"
You've already got one DMCA case.
That's why I'm asking. I don't want to have a second one. I just wonder if somebody asks me as a human being, a person, one person to another, or say comes to the 2600 meeting this Friday in the Citigroup building.
Do you have the software?
I'm not on trial here. At least not yet, anyway.
My understanding, if you sell it to them, that's a criminal offense.
Oh,
if you
course,
just give
no.
it to them,
I would never sell
then
something.
I believe it's a civil thing similar to the DCSS case.
Civil, because it's please, thank you, that kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah.
It's very civil. Absolutely.
What about drop lifting?
What?
Drop lifting.
Let's say I make 10 copies of it on a floppy, and I go to the 2600 meeting,
yeah.
and I just sort of toss them, put a stack on the table.
Do people do things like that at 2600 meetings?
I don't know about
stacks
that. Stacks
of
drop lifting
contraband on tables, such as programs and books and things like that?
Yes.
Drop lifting has been going on with music for a while. People who produce their own music have just been dropping CDs here and there for people to pick up instead of going through distributors.
Is that legal?
It's your material.
That doesn't mean anything.
Material.
You may have created the music, but that does not mean that you own it. That does not mean you can give it to people freely.
No, I don't mean... I'm talking about if I sit down at the keyboard and I sing a song and play some music on it...
Yeah, that belongs to the RIAA, I think. I don't think you have any say in it whatsoever. Again, the 21st century here. But anyway, so this hearing took place yesterday. I guess, Mike, what was the purpose of this hearing? To get them to forget the whole thing, maybe?
Well, I don't know what the purpose of the hearing was, but the Elcomsoft lawyers made a motion to, throw out the case, saying...
Mm-hmm.
This law is no good.
Mm-hmm. The whole DMCA.
The DMCA.
So it's goodbye. Actually, the judge didn't throw anything out or didn't accept anything. He's thinking about it right now.
Right. The reports I've heard from people who are at the trial said he was fair to both sides.
Uh-huh. That's always a good sign. You know, the judge we had in Detroit was fair. You could tell that he was listening, and that worked out to our advantage. The judge in New York for the DMCA case was, I don't think he was very fair. I mean... basically turning down every single one of our motions. I don't think every single one of our motions was bad, I don't think every single one of the other side's motions was good. So that's worrisome right there. But anyway, we'll be following the Elcomsoft case as the first criminal prosecution of the DMCA.
The good news is that there's no longer any individuals being prosecuted.
Yeah, but the bad news is that somebody actually went to prison for this.
Right, but he no longer faces 25 years, which is... an improvement in status.
Well, he's no longer facing anything because he's in Russia
right.
now. So,
right. But his employer is facing millions of dollars in fines.
It's amazing to say that you go to Russia to be free because that's what you have to do.
Russia is considering its own version of the DMCA right now.
Yeah.
So.
Do you have a name for that, or is that just something that we wrote up for them and has them to sign and dotted line? Yeah, it's happening all over the world, folks. It's not just confined to here, but a lot of it tends to happen here and get spread and. Other kinds of things happen in other places as sort of a test market, and then it comes over here. So we always have to be vigilant and keep our eyes open and listen to what other people in other countries are saying. And if you have particular laws or things that you're upset about or concerned about, write to us online, oth@2600.com, or send us regular snail mail at Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And this is something new. In light of all the new laws and regulations and restrictions and things like that, how about this? Secret launches of the space shuttle. As if you could keep that a secret. But they're actually trying. They're trying to... there's a secretive Atlantis launch that has been confirmed. I'm not quite sure what they mean when they confirm a secretive launch, but they did that. NASA has confirmed the start of its launch countdown for Space Shuttle Atlantis... they confirmed it today, but it's going to be taking place on sometime Thursday. They won't tell us exactly when. Now, they have new security guidelines intended to thwart a terrorist attack. Who? What kind of terrorist would attack a space shuttle? I mean, what are you going to do? You fly it someplace else to another planet or something? Just make it fall down? What? It makes no sense. The countdown clocks in the Launch Control Center had actually started the previous evening. For Atlantis's liftoff Thursday afternoon. on a space station assembly mission. And under the policy, which is 3 weeks old, NASA won't announce the start of the countdown until after the fact. And I'm not sure when they actually start counting down. I mean, they start at like 100 or something, or is it a higher number than that?
I think they start like a day beforehand.
Yeah. They won't announce the shuttle launch time until 24 hours in advance. In addition, the astronauts' movements on launch day will not be televised live as usual. Yeah, we know where they are. Now we can strike. I mean, it's really getting kind of ridiculous. Maybe they shouldn't announce where the president is during the day, any day, or where any elected official is. Maybe they should shut down C-SPAN because we'll know when Congress is in session, and that's when terrorists can strike too. Or maybe we shouldn't tell people where Congress is because people know if it's in D.C., that's where they should send the bombs. Maybe we just have a secret Congress and a secret schedule and secret elected officials. Yeah, well, they get elected in a secret election that nobody knows about. Anyway, liftoff will happen sometime between 2 p.m. and 6 p.m., which actually, if you know NASA, that's pretty much how it works anyway. They shoot for a time and it goes off some other time. Forecasts put the odds of good launch weather at 70% with low clouds and rain the main concerns. However, National Weather Forecast is keeping that secret as well, so nobody knows what's going to happen.
What about NASA TV?
That's a good question.
That live video feed that you can watch their control room from.
See, I wish I could get NASA TV, but that's one of the few channels I can't get.
No, I'm talking about on the web.
Yeah. On the web you can get it, too. Yeah. That's true, but it's kind of, you have to have a good connection to actually see things. But NASA Channel is one of the, or is NASA TV or NASA Channel? I always get it wrong. Well, it's whatever it is. It's a great thing to have on all the time because you just basically sometimes just see pictures of the Earth from the space shuttle for hours at a time, and it's kind of soothing. Or you just hear the chatter of Houston Control or Cape Canaveral or whatever. Okay, here's some other interesting news. Cyber policy guru and Congress's chief anti.
What is a cyber policy guru?
Well, I don't know. It's what this guy thinks he is.
I think it's a catchphrase.
A chief anti-terror cop said last Tuesday he fully expects another terrorist attack on the homeland, but added he opposes knee-jerk security measures that do little real good while infringing greatly on civil liberties. Former Virginia Governor James Gilmore, now the head of a congressionally appointed anti-terror commission, told an audience at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland, that a national ID card would be too creepy for me. We cannot, Gilmore said, let the terrorists redefine our society for us. Gilmore's post was created by Congress in 1999, but became much more critical after the September 11th attacks. The attacks created an environment of change in American society and culture, he said, a change for the worse. He said intelligence gathered by law enforcement authorities indicates the terrorists are attempting to develop programs that infiltrate and disable U.S. computer systems. I think we had one of those yesterday. I'd be shocked if we didn't have another attack. It would be so easy. But I think we have to recognize that you cannot allow the enemy the power to compromise our essential values and freedoms. The idea for a national identification system that would require citizens to carry an ID card with his or her picture on it and perhaps biometric proof like a fingerprint or retina scan has gained a foothold since the events of September 11th. Now, it's not currently required that we carry identification cards, unless you're entering this building. we have a policy in this building, which is really kind of funny. We see the same guy every single week, but we always have to show ID. Because I guess there's the off chance that a terrorist could rip the faces off of us and stick them on themselves and come in. But then wouldn't they take our ID card too? I don't quite understand. How many of you work in buildings where they just are so asinine about security that they make you do all these things, even though they know who you are? I'm not sure what it is that they're, and God forbid you actually get into a building. What are you going to do inside the building? I used to go inside buildings all the time and wander around and explore. And boy, I guess that's not a good thing to do anymore.
I think it might be more their policy downstairs. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the guy really cares.
Well, I'm not. I don't want to focus completely on downstairs because that's just one example, and this is happening everywhere. And no ill feelings towards the people downstairs at all. They're very nice to us, but I just think it's kind of silly. It happens. It happens everywhere.
I don't think they're really that nice to us.
Well, they're kind of nice to us. Depends how fast you're running when we pass them.
That guy nearly tackled you last week.
Yeah, I'm surprised he was able to too.
Yeah.
But regardless, it's the security systems are really kind of silly sometimes, and I think it's up to us to point out when they are. So if people out there have specific security concerns or examples, please let us know, because we'd sure like to hear about them as well.
I've seen evident about a half dozen buildings today alone. Mm-hmm. Just at, and they do it. Some people ask for a photo ID before you can walk in, but then they don't check the information. You could look, show your ID, put a different name down. They don't even look at it.
I went into the Empire State Building the other day, about a week ago, and it's like getting on an airplane now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through a metal detector and all this kind of thing, but they sort of like lose interest halfway when you start beeping through the machine as you keep going through. They say, it's got to be, you have a metal belt? Oh, you have a metal belt. That's what it is. You know, they don't investigate any further. They just say, okay, go ahead.
Well, they won't until there's another big incident.
No, I mean, seriously, people do go into buildings with metal things all the time. Are we going to have metal detectors everywhere? It's really getting kind of, you know, ridiculous.
Even currently in a lot of nightclubs,
mm-hmm.
If you have a pocket knife on you or something like that, not only do they take it from you, you don't get it back.
Yeah. Well, that's been the case in nightclubs for a number of years.
If you have something like, I have a Swiss Army knife on a keychain. Mm-hmm. They took that off and put it in a box. When I came back, it was gone. And the thing was all of this big.
See, I don't think it's so much terrorism they're concerned about in nightclubs, but rather things like, fights and vengeance and that kind of thing. But
maybe we should just ban metal objects.
Yeah, you know, go to an all-plastic society. I think that's where we're heading anyway. But I just think we're going to be going through these metal detectors everywhere we go and not really accomplishing anything, because it's very easy to get things around them anyway. I mean, what if you have your metal objects already in the Empire State Building, since there's all these rooms in there? You know, anything's possible. If you were, you know, a terrorist, you would have this all thought out in advance. It's not that difficult. It's just an inconvenience. It's intrusive. Now, you know, we're saying that national ID cards are not required, but they are required. Try going somewhere without ID these days. You can't even get on a train without ID. You know, it's really kind of disgusting.
No, they say you can't.
They say you can't. What, you got on a train without ID? You went,
do
you
it all
on
the
a train.
Time.
What's that?
Do it all the time.
Yeah. In fact, you lost all your identification on the way to the train, didn't
you? Well, most of it.
Uh-huh. So were you testing the system, I guess?
Not intentionally, no.
So you basically dropped your wallet down the sewer and ran onto a train and you got away with it.
Something like that.
Wow.
Did you get it back?
The sewer?
No, your identification.
No, it's still out there someplace. Still out there. But the point is,
so I can be impersonated.
Yeah, you can be impersonated. You're right. Identity theft by some evil hacker someplace, as the mass media will lead us to believe. But yeah, they say that you cannot get on a train without government ID. And in fact, you still get that warning. Let's see if you get the warning from Amtrak.
They have a friendly warning now.
Is it friendly?
Yeah.
It still takes a ridiculous amount of time. If you just want train information, see how long you have to sit through this. And you
this
can't...
is a new system. You're going to be shocked.
Oh, I am? Okay.
Thank you for calling Amtrak. We invite you to visit our website, Amtrak.com, for online reservations and service information. To hear information regarding Amtrak's security policy and ticket requirements for boarding trains between Washington and Boston, press 1
now.
Oh,
it's optional now.
Otherwise, press 2 to continue or simply stay on the line.
Let's hear one.
For your security, Amtrak guests are now required to provide valid photo identification, such as a driver's license or passport, when purchasing tickets and checking baggage with Amtrak agents. Be sure to allow sufficient time for ticketing, particularly if purchasing tickets at time of departure. Guests boarding at stations between Washington and Boston are required to have a ticket prior to boarding the train. Photo identification is necessary to purchase tickets on board trains elsewhere in the country.
I see. Okay.
Please listen carefully to the following.
You listen carefully. We have to go. So apparently they're easing up a little bit.
Well, the one thing that they sometimes do ask for ID is if you try and buy a ticket from a person.
From a human being. But if you buy from a machine, that's okay.
Yeah.
What if you
terrorists don't know how to use machines.
In fact, Bernie S. I saw Bernie S. do this. Now, don't anybody tell Bernie I'm saying this. But Bernie was up for we had an H2K2 meeting. We were conspiring about the conference coming up in July, which is going to be really, really cool. And Bernie was going back to Philadelphia on the New Jersey transit thing, you know, that switches to SEPTA and Trenton. You're taking a subway the whole way. And I said to him, why don't you go back on Amtrak, travel in style, like you're, you know, accustomed to? And he said, well, I don't have my ID with me. I can't. And then he thought to himself, wait a minute, I have a credit card. I can buy from a machine, and the machine is going to ask me for ID except for the credit card. And he did it. He did it, and the ticket printed his name on it because it knew from his credit card. And last I heard, he got on that train without showing anybody anything except the ticket.
Do they ask you for ID if you buy a ticket on the train?
I don't think you can buy a ticket on the train
you
anymore.
You can normally buy a ticket. If you're stupid and you forgot to buy a ticket, you can buy a ticket on the train.
If you're stupid, how do you get by the guy that asked for your ticket when you go down the escalator in Penn Station?
That doesn't always happen.
Really? Yeah. There was a big sign. Didn't we see the sign said that they no longer allow you to buy tickets on the train? Pretty sure they said that.
I didn't see that sign.
Well, regardless, I think they make it harder for you. But that's just one.
They didn't even take our tickets on the train.
When?
When we were on the LIRR the other day.
Yeah, they did.
They didn't take it when we first got on there. They took it when we were...
Oh, no, but we're talking about Amtrak.
Oh, okay.
No, LIRR is not even a real train.
Yeah, but it's in the same place. Yeah. You know.
I just insulted everybody in Long Island, but still, it's... come on already. It's so pathetic. It really is. Okay. One other item here. Free email could become an endangered species at major internet portals. Yahoo, Microsoft, they're all starting to charge or starting to offer premium services that charge you money for storing email, such as, it's still pretty cheap, $29.99 annually or $19.99, but I think you get ads on top of that anyway.
Yeah. Did you did you catch what happened with Yahoo earlier this week?
What happened with Yahoo earlier this week?
They instituted a new policy, a new advertising policy, mm-hmm. and didn't tell anybody about it. And this got sent around about four or five groups that I'm on. If you have a Yahoo mail address or you're a member of Yahoo groups, you go into your personal preferences and you'll see advertising preferences. And there's about 10 or 12 little things you have to answer yes or no to, and they've all been set by default to yes.
Right.
To include, can we send you snail mail?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And everything is set to yes. They did this across the board to all the users. I run like 8 or 9 different e-groups off of Yahoo Groups, and everyone on in my group told me this has happened to them.
Well, I'm familiar with situations where you check all these things off as no, and then something happens and they all get reset back to yes. So this is something where
this is something new, apparently.
They just added all these new questions but didn't tell you to answer the questions,
exactly.
And they answered them for you.
Didn't even tell you about it, and they put them all to yes.
That's something that deserves to be known far and wide. And I guess we can start by telling people here.
Yeah, it's been spreading through the groups mm-hmm. fairly rapidly.
Wow. Free email is pretty much going away. Free anything is going away. You know, mm-hmm. there's some newspapers online that think people are going to pay to read them online, and I guess the advertising just isn't working out. I don't know.
Well, either that or they require, some kind of information which they take and resell, like name, email address, where do you live.
Mm-hmm. Well, the New York Times has had a system like that for years, and people just constantly use the same accounts. Mm-hmm. They pass them around, and it seems to work. Yeah.
That's how I do it.
Yeah, I don't see the Times, going bankrupt over this, and I see people still buying newspapers. So it seems to me like, some things should remain on the net and maybe a little less advertising. Speaking of advertising, how many of you are victimized by these things called pop-unders where you... they're horrible. They really are. Basically, a pop-under is when you connect to something and you see a little flash and you know something's happened, but behind, literally behind your browser is another advertisement that when you close your browser, you'll see it. It's there and you have to close that in addition. The only browser I've found so far, and I'm sure this is not true, I'm sure there are other browsers, but the only browser I've found so far that's easy to turn those off is Mozilla, which you can download at, mozilla.org?
Yes.
And they don't yet have version 1. They're up to 0 point whatever, and they're still working out bugs. But it's still, I think it works better than Netscape or Explorer. There are a couple of things I've noticed that you can report bug reports on. But there is a choice there to just turn off unauthorized windows, windows that open up without you asking specifically for a window to open up, and that's what a pop-under is.
The only website that their pop-under stopping feature seems not to work on is the Times.
I saw a pop-under today. I saw a pop-under today, and I was wondering how it got there. I figured I must have, said something to make a pop-under or an advertisement show up on Mozilla. That's the only time I've ever seen it, and it was on the New York Times today.
So I don't know how the Times does it.
But we're going to find out,
yeah,
and we're going to tell you how to disable it, because advertising is really offensive in many cases, and it's unbelievable what they get away with. The amount of spam that just comes through email these days is is criminal. Not that I want a law against it, but I think we should just come up with tactics to fight it. You know, black holes, that kind of thing.
I recommend Spam Assassin.
Spam Assassin? Tell us about it.
It's a piece of software that has many ways of kind of detecting spam, one of which is kind of looking through it for key phrases. So any message
make
that
money
says,
fast. Yeah.
Any one message that says this is not spam probably is. And, you know, it's got a list of 100 phrases like that. And it works surprisingly well.
Uh-huh. How did they tell people about their service if they when they mail people? Their own service gets filtered out. They can't say we capture phrases like
it's
this.
It's not a service. It's a software program.
Well, if I wanted to tell somebody this, what you just said over the air, how would I mail them to tell them that? It would be impossible.
Know.
You know, if they had the service already, that is. Okay, let's look at some listener email. We're going to listener email. We're going to take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. This programming reminder, this coming Friday, April 5th from 7 to 8 p.m., there will be a discussion of the important Pacifica national and WBAI local board elections and the Pacifica bylaw revisions, a program to be hosted by Mike Fader. As part of the settlement that recaptured WBAI and Pacifica, there is a court-mandated series of elections to local advisory boards and the national board, and also a mandated revision of the bylaws of the Pacifica Foundation. All this must take place before the end of this year. Listeners and subscribers must be involved if we want to keep the foundation and our station from falling once more into the hands of dictatorial corporate controllers. Oh, what a nasty year that was. Mike's guests on the program are Carol Spooner, member of the Pacifica National Board, and Stephen Brown, a member of Concerned Friends of WBAI. Again, this is this Friday, April 5th from 7 to 8 p.m. to hear this important discussion about the revolutionary restructuring of Pacifica and WBAI. And even if this discussion was not taking place, listening to Mike Fader is still a pretty cool thing to do on a Friday night. So that's what's going on Pacifica-wise. Okay, here's some listener mail. This person informs us that they can get BBC World News on Cablevision in Brooklyn on Channel 21. Well, my friend, you are not really getting BBC World News. You're getting BBC World News for maybe an hour a day on Channel 21, which broadcasts it as a PBS station, but you are not getting 24 hours of alternative news. I don't want to say alternative news because it's not alternative news like WBAI is alternative news, but it is alternative for an American audience because it's something from a different country. And the only place you can get that right now is Canada. You can't get it in the United States anywhere, as far as I know. And if I'm wrong on that, please somebody let me know where you can get 24 hours of a different news network that is not Fox and MSNBC or CNN. This person says in the Chicago area we have 3 hours. It varies between 2 and 4 of commercial-free BBC news broadcast on the free airwaves. It's on Channel 20 WYCC around 4 p.m. Central Time. I know you're always saying how much you like the BBC, and I agree, and I listen to their radio broadcast over the web at work. That letter from Benjamin. Thank you very much for that information, and that's something to see it over the airwaves. But again, I challenge anyone to actually be able to turn on a TV anytime and see news from a foreign country. Here's a letter. I'm a bit surprised that you use... This is after we converted all of our archives from Real Audio to MP3, so that you can now listen to Off the Hook from 1988 to the present on MP. You can listen to it on MP3 players or whatever. Or if you still want to hear it in Real Audio, you can do it that way as well. This person writes in, I'm a bit surprised that you use MP3 and Real Audio formats for streaming Off the Hook. Why not Ogg Vorbis? I give up, people. I really give up. You know, we spent almost a year converting all these shows, and now another format, you know, that we have to convert to. Mike, tell us something about Ogg Vorbis. Do you know anything about this? Why is it better?
I haven't tried it myself, but it's patent-free.
Patent-free.
The MP3 is a combination of technologies, and to use it legally, you're supposed to license it. They've actually been trying to crack down on licensing. I know I haven't paid.
But it's so commonly used.
Supposedly, yeah. The quality is better with Ogg Vorbis as well.
Yeah, but the thing is, if it's already recorded as an MP3 or Real Audio file, how is it going to get any better?
It's not going
to
get
We'd have to you know, sit down with analog machines and re-record everything. And I'll tell you, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
What's wrong with analog machines?
I'm just saying, it's not the analog machines. It's the fact that we have 14 years worth of shows. I don't really think anybody wants to spend time going through yet again.
Okay.
Plus, I don't know, do MP3 players play that format as well?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, you can get plugins for, like, Winamp.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're not up to version one either. I say let's keep an eye on it, and that format actually does, you know, work out, we'll definitely do something. Right now, I think we should focus on maybe streaming. So if somebody wants to actually try to help us out getting one of those, you know, that format up in streaming form, email us, oth@2600.com. We got a lot of mail over the last day or so, people upset about what was happening to our website. In fact, Delcha, you called me.
Yeah, I called you because I got 16 phone calls at home from people I know telling me, oh, my God, the website, blah, 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 blah,
that's,
blah.
That's more than we got.
Well, I suppose I called you just out of spite.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I'm a little confused with what was happening. People told me that the site actually was a gov site. It was going to cybercrime.gov, which is kind of a funny name when you think of it. A governmental site run by the Department of Justice, all about cybercrime and,
how to cause it?
I think how to prevent it, actually.
Oh, and, that's no fun.
Or where to rat people out at.
What kids should do and shouldn't do on the internet and all kinds of handy tips like that and, you know, what a hacker is and how to prevent yourself from being victimized by one. And, apparently all day yesterday, April 1st, our site was forwarding over there instead of to the right site. It was apparently a typo on our part, and we apologize for that. The proper people have been disciplined, and it won't be happening again. But boy, did we get a lot of mail. And people were ready to, like, take up arms, you know. He goes, that's it, the last straw. I'm heading over there now, and I'm going to kick some butt. You know, this is we can't take this kind of thing anymore. You know, it's time for action to be taken.
Why am I suspicious that this happened April 1st?
I don't know. Maybe you're just a suspicious type of person.
Okay.
Yes. Here's another thing on streaming. Listeners demanded all editions of Off the Hook to be encoded in MP3 format, and I'm sure I was one of them. I thank you for this valiant effort to appease the masses. However, I desire more. and this is not a different format. This person wants all the editions of Brain Damage, or the other show that was on the other radio station.
Aren't you
also
doing that?
Yes, in fact, well, people don't know what I do in my spare time, but yes, we are going through the old editions of Brain Damage. I think we've done 1992 through 1995, and currently we're working on 1991, which is a very interesting year because that was the year of the Gulf War. So there's all kinds of interesting topics going on. We expect that to be up hopefully sometime in the next month or so. So people anxious to hear new editions of that, hang in there. It'll be okay. And if you have never heard it before, it's on our website as well, www.2600.com. What else? No one else has any news items to pass along? I brought all the news? Okay. Well, here's an interesting story, actually, that that you sent us, Jim.
Yeah.
About from the MTA, or from somebody that claims to be from the MTA.
I found that a very interesting piece of email.
All right, let's read this letter here. They send cops out with altered Metro cards. The TA got a machine from Cubic, which is the company that makes Metro cards, that few know about. Every clerk gets a visit several times and has these $1.50 cards made up. When they want to get you, they come around day after day with different cops and do another transaction and another. Finally, they get the card, usually to one ride over $20 or $15, such as $22 or $16.50. Use it near the start of your tour and then have you add it to another bait card near the end of your tour. So what they say is that you not only sold an artificial card, but were also nickeling. The bastards. I can't testify. I can't get you any documents. I can't save you. However, publish this in 2600 and put it on the radio show. Yes, we listen. Well, it's good to know they're out there. But it really sucks that they do this. I mean, why would anybody want to work for the MTA if this kind of crap is going on? To their own employees. I mean, it's bad enough you have to worry about people, you know, throwing Molotov cocktails at you. You have to worry about this. You know, your own employers trying to entrap you.
Yeah, I had been paranoid about that for some time. I recall mentioning to you that I figured they'd do something like that last year. But that apparently takes it one whole level further by throwing in the nickeling, which is essentially taking a token from a passenger and using a MetroCard or buzzing them through the gate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was not fun to receive that. I was shocked the hell out of my my seat when picking up the email.
Yeah. Well, we're glad people are listening out there. And please, if you have email to send us.
Let me just say to the person who sent that, I know that you're obviously as paranoid as I am by saying that you can't get me documents or anything, but if you really want to blow the lid off this, if this this is for real, for God's sakes, do come up with some document and send it prior to my trial. It's the only way that this crap will stop.
And if you have secret documents, you can send it to us at 2600, P.O. Box 752, Middle Island, New York, 11953. As always, anonymity will be respected, but make it safe and just don't put a return address on it and mail it from some foreign city someplace. Here's another letter from Sweden. I listen to the show for nearly 3 years now. I'm Swedish, but attend the Danish meetings. I came to think about some things. If I remember right, there was a listener with ideas about collecting pictures, sounds, and text about phones in one show. I remember you liked the idea and thought about it, but didn't have time to actually do it yourself. Is someone doing this? Do you need any help? If not, and you'd like to start a project, I would like to help out. Sorry, there are so many bad spellings. And yes, virtually every word here is misspelled, but that's okay. You're from a different country. You have an excuse. The people here don't have an excuse, all right? That letter from Curtis. And yeah, it's a great idea, and I would wholeheartedly support such an idea of people basically getting an archive together of old phone sounds, you know, sounds from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and maybe even before then, sounds of, you know, phones ringing, busy signals, the sounds that are made when you dial a phone. I mean, it's all changed so much. Just listening to those old editions of Brain Damage 10 years ago, it sounded radically different, and I'm sure the same thing on Off the Hook. When you make a phone call, you would hear switching noises. You don't hear those noises anymore. You would hear different kinds of rings, different kinds of busy signals. They all sound the same now. And there's also all kinds of international sounds that we're not familiar with as well. So if anyone out there has an archive, by all means, start making that available. Put it into MP3 or whatever format is in style this week, and make it available to other people so we can know what things sound like in the past. All right, 212-209-2900. I'd like to read this one letter we got today that basically has to do with a security hole, and then we'll take some phone calls. Dear Off the Hook, I have discovered a security flaw with the SNET, the Southern New England Telephone, DSL service here in Connecticut. I've attempted to inform SNET about this problem, but they show no interest in what I've found. The problem is related to routers made by Cayman, which SNET... I guess I just call them SNET, which SNET sells to DSL subscribers who wish to share their connection amongst multiple computers. By default, this router does not require a login slash password to access the setup options, and most SNET DSL customers who own this router never set a password. Because this router serves its setup menus on port 80, anyone can access these setup screens by simply typing the subscriber's IP into a normal web browser. That's a huge security risk because all of the computers behind the router can then be accessed. Worse yet, the user's DSL account name is visible. The password is blanked out with asterisks. However, for some moronic reason, the password is visible in the HTML of the setup screen. With the subscriber's account and password, anyone can read their email or use it to log onto the internet with a dial-up account, which SNET provides free to DSL subscribers. Think that's bad? It gets even worse. Apparently, SNET issues most DSL accounts with a default password of, ends, ASI00, and more than half of the subscribers never change it. Many of the subscribers I found with this problem are businesses, including a pharmacy, two schools, and the town hall of a good-sized city. Connecticut, you figure it out. I hope someone from SNET is listening and takes the initiative to fix this problem. Sincerely, a concerned listener. Well, hopefully we'll hear a sequel to this letter. See if it got worse or it got better.
Probably from the Secret Service.
Yeah, that's possible. That's definitely possible. All right, let's move over here to the phones. Full bank of phones here. 212-209-2900. Let's go over here. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah. I wanted to tell you a couple things that that they do when they check your bag. Like, if let's say you go to a museum, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you have, like, all sorts of different stuff in your bag, a few different compartments in your bag.
Uh-huh.
And the guy at the museum, he gets real angry and he says, like, I got to go through your bag, man. So you give him the bag and he'll look in one compartment of the bag and then nod you through. Meanwhile, you had, like, a knife, maybe, or, like, a weapon.
Well, who brings weapons to museums?
I mean, if you have them with you.
Uh-huh, right, of course.
I'm not saying that you should.
Uh-huh. Right. No, I'm
okay. Another idea.
Yeah, yeah. It's not an idea. Then it's an observation.
Is when you go to the post office,
mm-hmm.
and you're mailing a package.
Yeah.
Now, if this package weighs more than 1 pound,
mm-hmm.
you have to give it to a person.
Yeah.
You know, that way they're sure there's not a bomb, and the person takes it and they throw it in a box.
Uh huh.
Well, okay.
Wait. Okay.
Now, if you go to the post office on your own and you want to mail it, now you have to wait online for this to happen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you go there on your own. You want to mail it, you can't put it in the box yourself if it weighs more than 16 ounces.
You can't put it in the box yourself if it weighs more than... You have to give it to a person.
You have to give it to a person who's going to take it, and then they're going to put it in the box.
But that's the box that they have access to and you don't.
Right, but the whole point is this. I'm not mailing bombs, okay?
Uh-huh. No, it's a good idea. Good policy.
I don't have 45 minutes to wait online at the post office every time I want to mail a book.
Uh-huh. Maybe you should use a different mail company or something,
well,
like FedEx or UPS or something. Because I don't think they
you check the prices.
No, I have, but
have
I have
checked the prices. If you check the prices,
I have checked mailboxes. The mailboxes in the street, they have little signs on them that say
exactly
you cannot put things. But
and
what happens if you put things in there anyway? What do they do?
Well,
get them back
what
to
I
you?
Say, and I and well, I do that,
uh-huh.
and I don't know if my books make it to the far end or not because no one ever calls me to tell me.
Uh huh. Well, send us a book and we'll tell you. How about that?
What book do you want?
I don't know what books you have access to. Are you a bookstore or something? Or
no, I like books though. I like to read books.
Well, books are very good, and you know
they have a lot of information in it.
They sure
static
do.
Static information. It's not like that computer. Mm-hmm. I know you like the computer, but the computer everything changes. A book, static information. You take a book, you go to bed, you wake up the next morning, books right next to you.
Yeah. Well, originally this was supposed to be a book show, but they told me that there wasn't much call for that these days, so we made a computer
show. Well, I would call them
show.
Up yourself, then. I would call them up and tell them that you want to do a book show.
Uh-huh. Well,
and call it, how about call
you know,
it
sir, I think you should do a book show.
Man,
I think you it would be a great addition to
the... You know
what
I do with all these damn books? I mail them away.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, we could use those as premiums.
I can't hold on to them long enough.
We could use those as premiums. In fact, now that you mention it, I just want to tell the listeners that if you pledge for the last pledge drive, I just got the list of names today, so those people who are starting to curse our names for not sending them the premiums, they're going to be going out in the next week or so because we have the names. So,
now, if my name is on that list, I expect a book.
Yeah, well, if a book is what we promised you, a book is what you're going to get. And we'll send it properly.
Me.
Yeah, we'll send it through the proper channels.
I give money.
All right. keep doing that. Keep our station on the air and keep sending books to people in post offices.
Send us a book so we see this whether this problem is solved, whether it actually gets through the mail. Pick any book you want and send it to us here at Off the Hook, care of VAI.
Yeah, lots of books. That's what we want.
I'll send you a 4-pound book.
Okay. All right.
My name's Hannibal.
Thanks so much for the good thoughts.
All right.
and we'll go to another phone call now. 212-209-2900. Go ahead. You're on the air.
All right. I heard the audio format earlier. What was that? Al Gordis?
No.
I was afraid Og he went Gordis. Around inventing something new after the internet there.
No. These things.
OGG.
When did that format first start? How long has it been around for?
I have no clue.
I wasn't asking you, actually. I was asking Mike. But, Mike, do you know?
Why would I know?
I don't know. You seem to know about these things.
I think it was actually around before MP3.
Well, they certainly don't know how to market themselves
very
well.
It's kind of like
they?
VHS and beta. Like, you know, one took off because, you know, it got more, you know.
Or, you know, maybe the idea behind it wasn't marketing it. Maybe it was just, hey, I made something cool.
Right.
You know, and not, hey, I made something cool and I want your money.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, once it gets popular, is someone going to come along and say, "Hey, wait! I invented that, and I own the patent to it, and I'm going to charge everybody who's using it." You know, kind of.
They
like,
have a website, so it probably says on there.
What's the website? You know,
spell with.
Go to Google and type in OGG space VORBIS and see what comes up.
And what exactly does that mean, anyway?
Maybe it says on the website.
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess we're in the early stages. Is there any other question, caller?
Yeah, someone said earlier they had a few e-groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was me.
What were some of those? If I wanted to join them.
I don't think that's
not
still
over there.
Children might be listening still, so we can't give out those names.
If you're a Christian with a job, you're ineligible for most of these groups.
That's most of his groups probably, but
hey.
We'll see. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, guys.
How you doing?
I had just a few things to say. One. I'm not sure if you deliberately ignored this, but I suspect that for the most of the 70 years or so that BBC has been around, they've been on shortwave,
mm-hmm.
24/7.
Right.
And I used to listen to, mine is broken recently, but I don't remember what frequencies it's on now, but I remember, you know, listening to that constantly.
5975, try that one.
Although, yes, yeah, they're not on TV, they're not available even to subscribe on cable or any other way, you know, people should have a shortwave. I mean, everyone should just, even if they're thinking about an emergency situation, it's a good thing to have. And if you have it, you know, you should be using it to listen to BBC.
Absolutely, except that BBC cut their broadcast to North America a few months ago.
Shortwave broadcast?
Yeah. You can pick up European broadcast or broadcast to South America, which sometimes are in English. But they pretty much, and I think this is a big mistake, they said that so many people are listening over the Internet or through NPR stations late at night.
But that's crazy because
it's totally crazy.
Supposed to be a backup, really, because if those systems go down, you know, you'll have shortwave will be there.
Yeah, but you have all the Christian broadcasters. They're filling up the airwaves now with you know, all this propaganda.
Well, I've been, you know, I used to listen to WWCR, which had, like, Bill Cooper. Hour of the Time radio show, which I have lots of tapes of, which are real gems. I mean, in conspiracy theory shows, but I've enjoyed even the wacky Christian ones. I really, you know, kind of
And it's just when they predominate, when they take over things from other countries, that's when it starts to become a real pain. And yeah, I think the BBC is vital. You know, to hear them on shortwave, no matter where you are in the world.
Right, you should be able to.
Right, but in America, you can still hear them. You'll need a fairly good antenna setup.
I would suspect Canada would still demand BBC shortwave.
Well, I know they broadcast from New Brunswick. They have a transmitter there. So when they're broadcasting, I think, to the Caribbean or some other parts, you will be able to get a good signal.
Well, I'm going to get a new shortwave soon, so I'll definitely find out myself.
I know 5975 is one of the frequencies we can still hear them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right.
Another thing quickly. It's funny you mentioned advertising because it's been really on my mind with all the pop-up ads and everything. And there was a recent article about how the guy who was running the Best of the Web site was disillusioned with the Internet and was quitting and was saying that it wasn't as exciting anymore. And I was just, you know, my reaction is really good. I mean, I don't know. Don't you guys think the whole hype of the Internet and this whole, like, buzz to make money has really kind of destroyed that spirit? I mean, I know you guys have been talking about that. But.
Well, it's destroyed a lot. It's put a lot of people off, but the potential is still there, you know, and we have to be able to recognize that through all the garbage that's existing and, you know, clear away your spot and just kind of make the net what we want to make it and not listen to all the idiots that think it's only about making money or that want to regulate everything that you look at. You know, I think once we realize that we can, you know, have some kind of power, you know, we can empower ourselves to make the net what we want to do, I think that's when it'll start getting better.
Well, I hope so. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for calling. And let's see if we have time for a couple more. Good evening. You're on the air.
Coming June 25th.
I always call 611. And if you don't have the phone number of a payphone, do you know 958?
958 will give you the number most.
I believe this
10th anniversary.
This is 10 years ago, the first call from Rebel in 1992. Boy, this is really going to hurt. Wow, so
tune in for a special 15-minute call-in.
Well, wait a minute. You're being rather presumptuous here, Rebel. I don't know what makes you think that. I assume this is Rebel, because I don't think anybody else would take an interest. So.
You'll hear what has changed.
I don't believe this.
What hasn't.
Rebel,
can I call in?
Let me ask you a question,
off
Rebel.
The hook. Us calling in the 10th anniversary.
Is that Rebel?
It sounds like him.
It could be him. Well, okay. Rebel, if you are there, we'd just like to ask you a question concerning the calendar. If it is it June 25th this year?
Well, actually, it's June 25th. 4th was for 10 years, and then June 25th is Tuesday.
Okay, so that's what I was concerned about, because I wanted to make sure it wasn't the exact same date. All right, so June 24th, 1992 was your first call. June 25th, 2002 will be the 10th anniversary, where you think you're going to talk for 15 minutes. Yeah, okay.
I also mention that Clear Channel is being very annoying.
Oh,
they have
right,
more
I know.
Now. You know, it says, every advertisement they say United We Stand. And then you go to a mall now, and it says, Clear Channel Mall?
Clear Channel Mall?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, they took over a mall, huh?
Or or the advertising in the
You know, they can have all the malls. I don't care. Just give us back the radio stations.
Well,
keep the malls. You know
what they did?
What?
They took the $1 million that they raised from September 11, and now they're giving it away in a contest.
Where did you hear this?
Yeah, to win, listen to the Clear Channel station, and you can win $1 million.
Well, how do you know they didn't give the $1 million they raised to charities?
Because they didn't.
Well, how do you know this?
Because I heard it on CNN.
Okay, well, CNN might have a bone to pick with Clear Channel. I don't know. But let's see some evidence before we start making accusations like that. Thanks for the info, and yeah, I'll be sure to tune in that day for the 10-year anniversary. And those of you who want to hear Rebel from the very first day of the siege, just simply go to the website and listen to that show live, and you'll hear the shock and horror that came over our expressions as it.
Wait, what day was that again?
That had to have been a Wednesday because we were on Wednesday, June 24th, 1992.
It's my sister's birthday.
Well, great. You want to give out any more documentation on your personal life?
No.
Perhaps a social security number or something like that? Yeah. All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, are we speaking on any specific topic this evening?
You can do that if you choose. We've been speaking on a variety of topics.
Oh, okay. Can I address the issue of the Israeli-Palestinian situation? It
doesn't really have all that much to do with unless you have a technological side to it. If you really want to hear some interesting dialogue, I'm sure if you listen to Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade tonight at midnight, they're going to have a lot of information. And plus, Democracy Now!, which is on every day here on WBAI at 9 o'clock in the morning, and the evening news at 6 o'clock, you'll hear all kinds of things you don't hear on the mainstream media.
Maybe even Tahrir immediately after this program.
What's this? Oh, yeah, and of course, Tahrir is coming on right after this. I'm sorry, what was your question, sir?
What specific programming are we listening to right now?
We're listening to Off the Hook, which is a program for computer hackers or about computer hackers and technology and various things like that. And WBAI has all kinds of programming of alternative natures throughout the course of the broadcast day. So keep listening. Maybe you want a program guide, too, so that you'll know what's on. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, if you wanted phone tones...
Could you turn down whatever is in the background,
please? I'm sorry, real audio. Phone tones, there used to be a page at twpyhr.com. Now it seems something else bought that out.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably find a Google cache on it, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'll email a couple I found. One other thing, you're saying spam was getting really, really annoying.
Uh-huh.
One thing I do with spam, I have a couple rules in Outlook. Actually, there's four of them. Two of them listen for to unsubscribe in the body, and two others listen for the words to remove in the body, and then respond both with unsubscribe and remove in subject lines.
Wouldn't that get you kicked off of virtually any mailing list, though? I mean, you wouldn't get any of the mailing list mail, because they all say that, too.
Well, no. There's filters above it that'll filter that into folders before it hits the other filters.
I see.
It's complex, the way it runs down. But then also on the weekends when I have just a whole bunch of free time, you can run all four of those filters, I don't know, maybe 30 times on a folder of spam that I just keep. And so I end up sending like 30,000 email back out to these spammers.
That's always fun. Of course, you're tying up your own bandwidth by doing that.
Yeah, but, you know, free time. And you tie up theirs, too. And if everyone does this on a mass scale, who knows how.
How about you track down the people? You act like you're interested in what it is they're offering. And you make it your business to find the people that sent it out to you so that you can take advantage of that terrific offer. And you actually get to the point where you meet somebody face-to-face. And at that point, you splash water at them or something. I don't know. Just figure something out. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Throw a pie.
Yeah, throw a pie. Yeah, pies are always nice.
I sent out four emails today along those lines saying, I really like what you're offering. I'm interested in your product. However, I belong to a consortium of end users who refuse to purchase anything that is advertised with spam. Your name has been added to our blacklist. I'm really sorry because it looks like you have something really cool. But you're using spam, and that's just wrong.
Yeah.
And I got some interesting replies from that.
Unfortunately, we're out of time now, so we're going to have to pick this up next week, and hopefully all of us will be around then. And I know the callers will be, and we'll take more phone calls then. And I'm sure there'll be more developments in all these fields by then as well. In the meantime, stay tuned to WBAI, because there's all kinds of interesting things going on in the world besides the Cablevision fiasco that certainly have, gotten short shrift in the mass media. That's what this place is all about. So we'll pick it up again next week. Till then, Emmanuel Goldstein, have yourselves a good night.
This is Lee Cronick, member of your local advisory board. We invite listeners to a meeting of the local board Monday, April 8th at 6:30 p.m. at District Council 1707, 75 Varick Street, corner of Canal, on the 14th floor. On the agenda will be a discussion of the WBAI Program Council, defining and redefining lab committees, on-air lab reports to and from the listeners, selections to a search committee for a new general manager, and there'll be a special presentation on what is community radio and how listeners' concerns can be incorporated into programming. There'll also be a period for listener comments. We urge everyone interested in the growth and improvement of WBAI to attend this meeting. Monday, April 8th, 6:30 p.m., 75 Varick Street, 14th floor.